Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, are you overwhelmed? Are you anxious? Are you indecisive? Do you get taken advantage of? Perhaps you're disrespected. Well, we're going to deal with all that in this show. We're going to solve all these problems with an expert. Actually, two experts, because I have a co-host for the show, my wife, Deborah Roth, who is a wonderful support for so many people and is really deeply interested in this subject. And we're going to talk with the author of the book called The Om Factor, A Woman's Spiritual Guide to Leadership. And let me also just say that even though this is a great book for women, us men can really be helped by it. So I'm so happy to have our guest here on the show, Alka Dhillon. Alka, welcome.
Thank you so much, Peter. So happy to be with both of you today.
Well, we're excited because this book is really powerful. It really addresses these issues that we have in our lives, not just talking about them, but providing exercises, providing actions to take to make ourselves better people.
That's yes. What I think I really appreciated so much with it, Alka. So many people, everybody talks, thank gosh. I mean, I'm really happy people talk about meditation nowadays, and it's kind of the in thing. But there's so many people that think that meditation is just sitting there and trying to clear your mind. And that is one form, certainly. But there's a lot, especially in our culture, our very fast-paced culture, that it's hard to shut down your mind. I think there are a lot of questions about different ways that we can move to our center, that we can address issues in our lives that, because I think meditation and yoga, you know, both of which you address in your book, without going to see a doctor, they're very therapeutic in the deepest sense of the word for any of the issues that I think are life issues, not just for women, as Peter said, and not just necessarily for leadership or women in corporations. Your work, the work that you do, is really for men and women everywhere, because we all have these issues.
And what I like, Alka, is that you're a wonderful role model, because whatever these issues have been in your life, you've strengthened yourself to be able to form your own company and be a successful businesswoman. Great to be the role model for what you're teaching.
I thank you both for that. It's lovely. I think you hit on it so well that we try to go outside and find help and what can I do and how can I heal? Please help me. When really we are our own best doctors, and through meditation, and it's not about clearing your mind, because that's just too much work, first of all. Let's just say that. And it's not even accurate, right? Meditation is the practice of not only going within, but being present within. So you're going to go within, but you're going to be there too. And I think that's the piece that we all miss. It's about being present in that meditation. So I tried to demystify it in this book a little bit. You're simply observing your breath. I think a lot of your audience probably meditates, so we don't need to go into that. It's not about how long you do it. It's about how consistent you are with doing it that matters. I mean, I'd rather that you, instead of doing 1 hour a week or 2 hours a week, you do 5 minutes every day. You'll have a much better result. And that's why when you do yoga, you'll feel immediate results right after, because you're connecting that mind, body, spirit. That is there. Peter, you had said about the role model. It's so humbling to even hear that word, because I feel like in this book, I just kind of bared my soul and just all of my vulnerable points that I've had and how I formulated a level of success for my definition of success and how I'm living that. And if these tools can help other people, I wanted to share them on how they could apply it in the moment. Because the Om Factor came about, I would be sitting in a meeting or talking with someone or something, and there was nothing out there to help me in that moment when I would be experiencing some kind of disease or discontent or a conflict of some sort. There was always things that taught me how to journal or deal with it later, and we can talk about it later. But what do I do when I'm dying over here? What do I do now? I tried to figure out, what am I doing to deal with those things? There were 7 tools, you know, to doing that. And then there were also 7 traits I found that I was actually cultivating, and I thought that they would be very, very helpful so that those situations wouldn't arise as often. And when they did arise, I would respond rather than react to them. So that's why those traits came about. And I realized with the OM factor, why the name came up is that I would meet people like Arianna Huffington or Deepak Chopra or both of you, because everyone has their own OM factor. It's how do you raise it? And I noticed that they were operating at a very high level. They had very strong philanthropic endeavors. They had very strong familial and friendships. Those relationships were just robust. They were lovely people, and they just kind of flowed through. And I said, my gosh, how are they doing this? And all of these people had some practice of meditation. Some of them would talk about it. Others would not talk about it. I mean, you'll see all these big CEOs of companies. A lot of them are not talking about it, and they're coming out now more. And I coined it the OM factor because they had something. And so that's where that came about.
Well, and you do give a number of tools, the seven tools. So the subtitle, which really encapsulates it, and Peter hit on some of them when he was introducing the program, seven essential tools and seven key traits to cultivate for your success and well-being, the subtitle of the book. I have to say, yours is one of the first books, because there were so many great little gems, not, as you said, not like long, you don't need like a half an hour a day of oming somewhere, 5 minutes, or there's just so many little pearls that I did a summary of the book, so I had them all in one place. And so I have this list. It says, okay, so if I'm feeling overwhelmed, the affirmation that you suggest, well, and you can talk about this, but there's an affirmation, there's a Sanskrit chant you can sing, which I love, and then there's a gemstone for everyone, which is I'm a big crystal person. It's great you called it gemstones, because that's not going to freak out the CEOs.
And there is a reason for that, the reason I put that, because, you know, a lot of the times when we're talking about this stuff, and I know you know this in your work as well, both of your work, it sometimes can get polarizing. They hear the word spirituality and they think of religion when it's nothing to do with that, right? It's all within what we all have anyway. But I put the gemstones, and I wish you could see my desk right now. I would turn the camera so you could see, but I have all of the gemstones and the things that I discuss here that I use, and I have them in my purse or I have them wherever, and I use them in the moment. I have them around me because the energy radiates, as we all know. And I put those specific affirmations and mantras, the Sanskrit version of the affirmation, because some people feel comfortable saying an English affirmation and some people feel fine saying the Sanskrit mantra. Those were all chosen very specifically for their energetic properties, their vibrational properties, just the way the vibration is of when you take one of them, like this too shall pass, that has a very specific vibration. Om Shanti, 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 very specific vibration. And those do affect your chakras. They have a universal effect. But what I love about them is that you'll see an immediate result. When I use them, I see an immediate result. If I'm on the phone and I'm dealing with something that's challenging, let's say at the moment, and I'm feeling overwhelmed, I will repeat that specific either affirmation or mantra, whatever I feel comfortable with. And I'll notice that I'll not only have a physical response, but I'll notice the person on the other line, the conversation shifts a bit. So that's what's really neat.
Alka, there's so much in this book about how to better yourself. And yet there are a lot of us who know what we want to better ourselves about. And that's also what you address, these feelings of overwhelm or inadequacy, indecisiveness. And I think that's a great attraction. There are things about my life that I went through those chapters right away. And I said, okay, how am I going to help myself here and there? And there was so much wisdom in there and support. And I love some of the experiences that you've had, for instance, with horses.
That was a great one.
That one made an impression on Peter.
Talk about your horse experience.
Sure. So, okay. I'm going to bring you all to Miraval, which is in Arizona. It is a magical place. If you can envision, maybe a lot of your listeners have been there. I don't know if both of you have been there, but it is so magical. The energy of the space is phenomenal. But the people that are there, the healers that are there, the teachers that are there, it's not only wisdom that's there. There's a lot of nurturing, a lot of, you do a lot of self-introspection. There's a lot of team building that goes on there. A lot of corporations come there and they do team building exercises to learn about trust and going out of your comfort zone, and which we all need to do. So I was at this place, this magical place. I spend a week there every year. Half of this book was actually written there. I had an experience with a horse, and I have not ever ridden a horse. I was a little scared to ride a horse. I'd never been on one. I think they're majestic beings. I think they're gorgeous. Never been on one. So I went with a group. We did do a private session, went with a group, and I thought, okay, I'm going to learn how to ride a horse today. I'm going to do this. I thought it was a get over your fear type of exercise. So I go there, and there was nobody sat on a horse. We had to clean the horse. So I said, okay, this is what I signed up for. I'm paying for this, first of all. I am now going to do this. So I go there, and lo and behold, because there's always something, when you go there, as they have you cleaning out the hooves and things like that and get you ready, they're doing it and showing it to you, okay? But then they ask you to do it. So I go up and with trepidation go towards the horse and I say, hi, you know, how are you? You look so beautiful and you're just so majestic. And I just really like to clean your foot right now. Could you please give it? I was talking to this horse, right? And meanwhile, the observer is observing me. The horse does not lift up his hoof. She made it look so easy. I mean, she went, she came, she picked it up, and she just did it. I realized that she was observing how I deal with people, how I deal with situations, and how I deal with everything. And I further realized that the horse did not respond to me giving him all that honey and all those things, thinking I was easing him into this process. He wanted to have someone that was going to come in there with confidence and get the job done. So I kept trying it. And she came up to me then and she said, let me ask you some things. And she asked, you know, kind of how I deal with people. And we started to have a lovely conversation, which I won't take away from the experience too much. But needless to say, I changed my tactics and that hoof came right up. I cleaned the hoof and I was on my merry way. And there are several other lessons that I learned, not only about myself, but about how other people like to be approached and dealt with, not only in business situations, but in relationships, in any type of interaction. And that goes for animals too, because they're right. Beings as well. So it was lovely.
What I learned from it was that it's actually our insecurity, feeling that we're not going to be respected enough and approved unless we're sweet enough and kind enough and gentle and prove ourselves that we're acceptable.
Right.
But if we don't think we're acceptable enough, we have to use language around that rather than just being direct.
Absolutely. And I was placed in a situation which, again, I was very fearful of. I'd never been on a horse or everything. So you go back to those coming from the insecurity, and this is where the vulnerability comes out. And I wanted to share that, because so many of us are in those types of situations where you are truly terrified and you don't know what's going to happen. And it's okay. It is okay. You just need to realign and change the tactic and be present in that situation, and you'll see so much more manifest. And it was such a joyful experience. I love horses.
And it's funny, because when you're talking about it too, Alka, I'm thinking, okay, so in that situation you were, I'm looking at my little summary that I created, you were feeling anxious because
yes.
It was all new. So
yes.
You could have pulled out your rose quartz, which, as you say in the book, is about love and balancing your emotions. You could have done the affirmation for feeling anxious, which is I'm supported. You could have said or sung the mantra, Om Gam Ganapataye Namaha. I'd sing that one. I sing mantras, which is connected with Ganesh, who is the remover of obstacles. Think of the horse as an obstacle, but it was more the obstacles within you. Because as you said,
right.
It's all coming back to sourcing your own inner wisdom and using these tools to kind of trigger what's there. You brought ancient wisdom to modern times to allow us to do that. I get a kick out of people who call this kind of thing New Age. I said, really? No.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was using certain tools at that moment for myself. I didn't bring that up in when I was just speaking about it, but I absolutely did. Because, you know, Ganesh is the remover of all obstacles, right? And that's what he symbolizes. That is one of my favorite mantras. That's one of my go-to mantras for manifesting, and especially removing an obstacle. And a lot of the times, I think we don't realize that the obstacles are self-imposed. You know what I mean? It's not so much what is there. It is what is here.
And your approach to the horse created the obstacle of the horse not appreciating your not being direct enough.
Absolutely. I really feel the tools, along with me realizing what needed to be done, they were just so helpful. I got a great result.
One of the things, too, that I think shows up both in your tools for when you find that you're overwhelmed, inadequate, your list of 7 areas that you can get support on with your work, and then also with the 7 traits to cultivate, they're really designed to get us out of our head. And some of them, and particularly, you've been talking about these 7 tools with the affirmations and with the gemstones and all that. But then the 7 traits to cultivate, what you bring in there are, for the most part, I mean, there are some that aren't specifically yoga practices or asanas or postures, but you bring in yogic experience when you're talking about being present. It's alternate nostril breathing, which anybody who's done yoga in the audience knows about that. I just led that at a coaching conference recently and kind of educated people about how that activates the brain and prana and life force energy and all that. But yoga does that anyway, and I love how very specifically you brought in particular yoga poses that you don't need to be a pretzel to do by any stretch of the imagination. Very simple yoga poses to literally embody these traits that you want people to cultivate, like being present, like being open to serenity, giving freely and with gratitude. So I'd love to hear you talk more about that.
And thank you for noticing that, because what I try to do when I'm practicing these traits, well, first of all, let's go back how they even came about. I really realized that there were these certain things that I was inadvertently cultivating throughout my life. And then get to writing. I love to write. There would be these themes. And those themes, like being open to serendipity, I can give you stories on that. I'll give you a great story on that one. And being present and digesting your thoughts creatively. These are so important. If you take being open to serendipity, there's so many times we don't even realize the person sitting next to us and how important they are. The person that's sitting in front of you is the most important person, whether they're next to you or, you know, beside you. I'll give you a very brief example. 20-something years ago, I was in my 20s, and I was determined. I went to this big conference where a Fortune 50 CEO was speaking, and I was determined to make that person my client. I went in there with an agenda. I did not think about anything else. I said, I am going to do this. I go into that conference. There's about 500 or 600 people. I'm sitting there, a gentleman to my right and a woman to my left. And I'm just have my notepad out. I'm ready for any words of wisdom that this man is going to impart. And then I'm going to use those words and get a meeting with this person. So that was my agenda. I was there, and then there was a break. Okay. And during the break, the woman to my left tried to engage me in conversation. Meanwhile, I was consolidating my notes. Okay. Having my cell phone, and it was a StarTech cell phone. This was back when the flip phones were cool. And so they were there. And I was just consolidating my notes. I didn't even look up at her when she was speaking. Hi, she says, hi, how are you? My name is so-and-so. What brings you here? And I'm just writing. And at the same time, I'm saying, I'm so thrilled to be here. And as I'm writing, I'm not even looking at her. I cannot wait. I'm so excited about what this person has to say. I am going to get a meeting with this man, and he's going to be my client because we have so much to offer him. And so I'm doing all this. And as I'm doing this, my phone drops. And she picks up my phone. I still haven't even looked up at her. And she hands it to me. And I look up at her for a second. I see this beautiful face. And she has a smile. And I said, thank you. And then he starts talking. So I don't engage with her anymore. Next break comes. She tries to engage with me again. This time I look at her, but I'm not really engaged. I'm not really present in that moment. And she asks me, she says, what do you think about what he has to say so far? And, you know, all of these things. And I said, I think it's great. You know, all of these things. And we went on. I ask her nothing about herself, nothing. My phone falls again. This is the universe. She picks it up again And she says, here you go. And I look at her and I say, thank you so much. And she said, you know, you really want a meeting with him? And I said, yeah, I mean, that's why I'm here. And she said, well, I'm his assistant.
I had a feeling that was coming.
And I felt about this big. I'm making a sign with my fingers and it's very small. And I know my face got flushed and I just looked at her and she said, if you want a meeting with him, I'm happy to set one up with you. And I said, thank you so much. And he is still a client of ours today. That was fantastic. Be open to serendipity. Be mindful of who is around you and have no agenda. Please have no agenda. Go in, be open to the creative forces of the universe, and you will be so thrilled with what you get.
Right. And this is why your book is so important on so many levels, because it allows us to understand where our struggles are, what we don't appreciate about life, when we're not looking for serendipity and when we're not understanding how we're being taken care of, our minds can project all kinds of negativity. The book is for women because women come from a history of being oppressed. So there's a great need among women in general to be invigorated and strengthened and reinforced, because women's role just archetypally is to want to be supported and protected in life, and knowing that that's a slippery slope. So they need to be able to be strong for themselves, and this gives them that inner strength.
And I think teaches them the power of the feminine traits that have been demeaned so much, and to be able to talk about leadership. And thank goodness we're seeing the archetypes of powerful divine feminine, which is what your book really addresses, I think. That compassion and sensitivity and intuition, expressing emotions freely, all those are defined as feminine traits. But thank God that even the corporate world now is recognizing that those are traits that you need to cultivate to be a successful leader. And you give people really practical ways to do that.
Yeah, there's so much about leadership in this book from your own experience of bumping into serendipity.
Literally, like it's right next to me. It's so true about the divine feminine, but we all have the divine feminine. Even men have the divine feminine within. And women will say this, like when they meet a gentleman that's really tapped within to his divine feminine state, and they'll say, oh, he's so sensitive and so understanding. And when really, that's normal. Right. That should be the norm when you are balanced. There's a mantra in there, Shiva Shakti. Shiva is, you know, the Lord that is in Hinduism, that really embodies the masculine and feminine, thereby embodying creativity. Just that mantra that I also provide in there, that Shiva Shakti, if you really want to cultivate whether your masculine side or your feminine side and kind of bring that together, and it is a force when you do that in any kind of interaction, I think that that's wonderful. But these specific tools and traits, they not only empower women or empower men, I really want to talk about the fact that they actually can change the entire vibration of the conversation. The path which that conversation or that interaction or transaction was going down, it's not in stone. You can change that, and you have that power within yourself. And that's what I try to address also in the book.
Well, we're creating it to begin with. From wherever our mental station is,
right,
and our emotional, we are creating the response in people anyway.
And so, why not do it from the most elevated place possible? You really give people the inner tools to do that. Because it's interesting, some of these are things that you do. You're not going to necessarily sit in a meeting and sit there and put your fingers on your nostril and do alternate side nostril breathing. There are plenty of ways to anticipate going into a big meeting or a driving somewhere that you're anxious, whatever it is, that you give people preparatory tools to handle it. And then likewise, coming out of it. I used to do this to clients, I still do it with clients early on. Your gemstones become your own personal self-empowerment amulet. People freak out when you use words like amulet and I'll call it a touchstone, literally. Keep it in your pocket. Keep it in your suit pocket if you're walking into a heavy-duty meeting. I call it stealth spirituality in the workplace.
But those are the ways to be present. Because when you're going to reach reach in your pocket to feel the stone, then you're present in the idea that you're strengthening yourself.
And that is so important because you're not only present and also you're present for the energy that that is emitting from that particular gemstone at the time. I even wear certain gemstones all the time. Women can put them in their bras. I've seen that. They do it. And men put them in their pocket, or you can put them in your briefcase or in your purse or on your desk like I have here. But there is a reason why the tools were done so that you can use them in the moment. And those traits were done so you can use them as preparatory before a meeting, just like you had said, or you can do them at another time when you're at home or whatever. But it's going to enable that delta, that space to be created, so you're not feeling those awful things all the time and so often. I'll do alternate nostril breathing in my car right before I come in to just bring myself into that moment.
But there's even certain yoga poses, like you talk about. Yeah, or a tree pose. I stand on the subway in tree pose, and you talk about tree pose being perfect for digesting your thoughts creatively. If you're moving into a creative meeting or whatever, just stand in tree pose for a couple of seconds.
It's just seconds. And truly, because what is the tree, right? The tree, it has its roots and they're into the earth. Those roots expand, but you have that foundation. And that is what is so important, is to ground oneself with the earth. And that's what the tree symbolizes. And it brings us into that space. There's a tree pose is just, it's not only people use it for a balancing technique. To me, it's so much more than that. You go so much deeper within your core, and you're bringing that then to the meeting, which is the beauty of meditation, right? When you meditate in the morning, even if it's for 2 minutes, and I talk about that in the book, how you put on your phone 2 minutes on that timer, I promise you that stillness you will take along with you to every interaction that you have. And you'll come from a very different place. When people don't meditate, people have tweeted me or something that because of your book, I've started meditating and I'm applying these tools. And you know what? One day I didn't do it and I didn't feel right. Why is that? That is because you will have a vibrational shift. You want to elevate your vibration and you want to keep it as elevated as possible.
Well, earlier you used the term grounding, and I'm picturing before going into a meeting, just doing one of these mantras, and because I'm doing it, feel supported by it and reaffirmed that my energy is correct going into this meeting. So it reinforces, it grounds me to do this mantra.
Absolutely. And I would encourage you to do it in the moment, even if you're repeating it in your mind. It has the same vibration, even if you're silent, right? Because our thoughts carry so much. I mean, our thoughts are where we create everything, through our consciousness and through our thoughts. So I use them, even, you won't even know, I might be even doing it right now.
Well, we're about to end the show, so you can even keep on doing it afterwards too.
Yes, yes.
I want to remind the listeners that we're talking to Alka Dhillon, Dhillon, the author of The Om Factor. How can people connect with you? Is there a website?
Absolutely. Not only a website, I'm very active on social media personally. So please, I would love to engage with everyone. My website is www.alkadhillon.com. That's AlkaDhillon.com. Also, on that website, you'll also find merchandise on there. So there's Om Factor t-shirts and things, but more importantly, there's an Om Factor RX kit. And that is the kit that has all 8 stones that I talk about, along with the mala, the beads, to do your meditation, all in a very lovely pouch and a kit that you can carry around with you. That's one thing. On Twitter, you can reach me at The Spiritual CEO. That's The Spiritual CEO. On Facebook, it is Alka Dhillon, just my name. And then on Instagram, at The Spiritual CEO. I also blog at The Huffington Post. You can just type in my name, and love to engage with everyone.
This is great. Alka, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew. It's so wonderful to talk with you. And Deborah Roth, I'm so happy that you could join us, too.
It was great to be here. Wonderful to talk with you, Alka.
I'm talking with both of you, Deborah and Peter.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.